Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Hey, what's going on? Mark poked his head into the doorway of his daughter's room and found her sitting on the side of her bed in the dark, her head in her hands. I can't go, Dad, 13-year-old Elise began to sob. I just can't go to rehearsal. I can't. Her shoulders began to shake as her dad sat down beside her and gently put his arm around her. What happened, kitten? What was so terrible? She looked up at her father with a tear-stained face. Oh, Daddy, it was so embarrassing. I totally forgot my lines, and it was an important monologue. I was all alone on stage. Ah, sweetie, Mark gave his daughter a hug. That's why they call it stage fright. He reached for a tissue to wipe her cheeks. Besides, he shook his head, last time I checked, making a mistake was not the end of the world. You don't understand. You just don't understand, she began to sob again. It is for me. From a parent's perspective, why is it important for children to learn from making mistakes? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has been working in the mental health field for more than 20 years. Susan Rail is a licensed clinical social worker who has extensive experience and expertise working with children, adolescents, and their families in a variety of settings. She has worked in psychiatric hospitals, therapeutic foster care, school settings, and outpatient care. Susan has provided individual, group, and family therapy throughout her professional career, working with depression, anxiety, mood disorders, ADHD, school problems, behavioral problems, social skills deficits, family problems, and attachment issues related to adoption and/or abuse neglect backgrounds. She believes in giving support and guidance to parents while helping kids become more successful in their lives. Her goal is to empower the parents and strengthen their parenting skills in order to be more effective and successful with their children. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Susan.
It's very nice to be here. Thank you.
Why is it a good idea for kids to fail at something sometimes?
I do believe that it's a learning process. We can't learn without making mistakes.
We have a culture that's so focused on helping children succeed that it seems like sometimes we don't know how to tell them how they can fail and survive. It's sort of the picture of these kids jumping out of windows if they don't do well on their SATs, that the world's going to come to an end, really.
There seems to be more pressure to succeed, more pressure even through middle school, high school, to get to college these days. And so I think the basic key to helping kids realize that it's okay to make mistakes is starting early. And to kind of build a culture and messages in your home that it is okay. Part of that is when parents make mistakes, to acknowledge it, say they're sorry, and kind of process what happened and what to do the next time.
We think that our teenagers, by the time they get to be teenagers, figure we make mistakes most of the time.
In some families, the messages aren't that it's okay to make mistakes. If the parents get frustrated at the mistakes, they may start to yell. They may start to be too punitive. They may start to punish too much. And then the children, I think, begin to fear making the mistakes. They have fear of failure. And if there's ever fear of failure, there's risks of things like, you know, becoming a perfectionist, which increases anxiety. And then if there's a child, for instance, I've worked with many kids who are just afraid to even just to write a paper. And if it's not perfect, they just wouldn't know what to do with themselves. And so they don't try. And they don't even start it.
I think there are times when parents enforce that fear of mistakes by hovering over the child. Let me help you. Let me help you fix this. No, that isn't right. Mm-hmm. And that's devastating for a child. But sometimes parents can't accept that the child needs to make his own mistakes and recover from them.
Right.
Isn't making mistakes part of everyone's life? Why is it so different for kids?
Well, I think with kids, there's more opportunities for learning. As adults, we kind of get, you know, kind of complacent in our patterns. But for kids, they're always developing and learning and changing. So if parents can find the opportunities for learning about their mistakes, then it helps them to be able to cope with mistakes when they're adults. You almost want to embrace mistakes and not put pressure on the kids not to make them.
It's interesting. You think about development and you think, well, in the most important stuff, learning to walk and learning to talk and, you know, the stuff about riding the bike and falling off, kids make mistakes all the time. What's the difference between their ability at those early ages to integrate mistakes? You know, they just get up and do it again or something. And then all of a sudden there's a line at which then mistakes are terrible.
Well, I think they begin to talk. They begin to want to become independent, especially as you become a teenager. And so there's a little bit more emotion involved with the parent-child interaction. Oftentimes, the parents feel like the kids aren't listening to them. And so it's frustration and then kind of anger that they're not following directions. Well, I've told you once. Why do I have to tell you twice and three times to do it that way? Well, my thought is kids need repetition. They need reinforcement. They need reassurance. And so the myth of the kids are going to listen, quote, it's kind of a myth. Because they listen to you, but they still make the mistakes because they're trying new things out. They're exploring the world. They're wanting to assert their own ideas and actions and comments. So it's not going to happen the first, second, third time. And so the idea of disciplining when kids make mistakes can be seen as teaching moments instead of punishment. Taking away things. A lot of people, you know, believe in taking away things. You can do it if it's a natural consequence. For instance, a child is texting all day long, which we know is a big thing these days, but they're not getting their work done. The initial instinct for a parent may be, your phone's taken away for 1 month. That's a little extreme. What a natural consequence would be, okay, let's make a plan. And again, dialogue is and communication is key here, not to just tell them what to do or to take something away and then walk away. But the other plan could be, okay, here's your homework time. When it's homework time, you give me the phone. And if the child is, you know, texting at 2 a.m. under his or her pillow, then they need to take the phone at night. So it's a natural consequence. It's getting in the way of your succeeding. And so we're going to take it away at those times when you need to be doing other things. But you can have it back because the social network and interaction is so important to kids and adolescents that you don't want to take it away completely. But what I think happens is there's just so much that the parents can just be tired and frustrated and they just kind of throw out punishment or consequences thinking that that's going to work. What you also need to do is have dialogue. And when I say dialogue, I don't mean lecturing. So if there's kids are making mistakes, after the emotions have dissipated, and I always say parents and kids can go to their corners and cool down, dialogue, which means hearing the child, letting the child have a voice, not just lecturing them about the mistake, this is what you need to do, and then walking away. Problem solving is a great way of having that dialogue to give the child an idea, okay, what happened? What happened? What could you do differently? And what's a plan of action? Again, it's a problem-solving communication technique that takes some time, but it also takes time and energy to have conflict and to put pressure and to have too much emotion in the teaching.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on making mistakes.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Susan Rail about helping children learn from making mistakes.
Some kids don't like to try new things, and it's harder working with those kids. Your emphasis on communication is even more important, I think, there. You might have a child who will try riding a bike a couple of times. The parent lets go, the child falls. The parent lets go again, the child falls. I'm done. I can't ride a bike. And it's difficult to get a child like that back on. It's the old story of if you fall off the horse, you got to get back on and go riding. And so those kinds of kids are harder to work with, but it sounds like the same techniques.
It is the same techniques. And I think if you're starting at a place where the kids are unsure of themselves and they're more insecure in general, again, starting from an early age, recognizing that they're uncertain type of kid and doing a lot of reassurance and letting them know that it is okay, they're going to be okay. But it takes them to trust the parent to be able to give messages of, you know, you can fall off and get back on, and I'm going to be here for you. So again, trust from the beginning between parent and child does come from communication and dialogue, and not just the parent kind of visualizing that the children obey and cooperate and do what I say versus we're going to do this together because I'm human too, and I've always made mistakes, and I still will make mistakes.
Susan, how is a social mistake different from a child's mistake on a school project, for example, in a child's conception of failure?
Social mistakes are interesting because I look at that as kind of the intervention to that is skill training. There's a series, it's called Talking Together series, and it comes from the Autism Resource Center of South Florida. But it's not only for kids on the autism spectrum. As I was looking through it, it really is about skill building, learning how to make mistakes, accepting that you make mistakes, embracing mistakes as part of life is a skill. And so social mistakes do take practice. So any kind of skill that you build, you have to practice. Playing an instrument, sports, you know. Yeah, I say this to kids all the time, like, do you get better at piano if you don't practice? And they're like, no. Well, social skills are the same thing. You need to practice it over and over for it to get better. And so whether or not the child is on the autism spectrum or not, you can always build a skill, you know, based on trying again. And I always say practice makes progress, not practice makes perfect. When kids use that saying, I kind of change it for them because the word perfect is just too much of an expectation. Nobody's perfect. Kids will know to say that, but you always think of making progress with social skills, making friends, keeping friends, how to show interest in your friend, how to listen to friends. Those kind of mistakes, I think, take an ongoing process of building your social repertoire and actions and responses to other people versus the child's mistake on a school project is kind of an isolated incident you can look at a little bit more objectively. The social mistakes are, again, involve emotions and relationships a little bit different than the projects.
So can parents help this along by role-playing with a child?
Yes. For instance, either role-playing or replacing behaviors, comments, responses that maybe the parent sees as not helpful to the social situation. You don't only want to label that it's not good, you want to help them to replace it with the more appropriate or more appealing social response. Sometimes the kids don't come up with that themselves, and so you almost have to give them ideas, and then you role play, and then you practice. And the parent can pretend that they're a friend or use a sibling, sister or brother, to do that. Again, it seems like it takes a lot of time to do this because you really do have to take time to have dialogue and do the role playing and do the practice, but it takes a lot more time and energy to feel frustrated and to feel worried and put pressure on your kids.
I think they also get it through books. We read them because I've noticed I have a 2-year-old grandson who's local, so I get to do a lot of reading. And I've noticed a number of his books deal with two animals or two children who are friends. And those are the books he wants me to read him right now. He's in preschool. So he's making friends outside of home, away from mommy. It's quite interesting. Frog and Toad are friends.
Frog and Toad is wonderful.
Isn't that so cute? And another one that we discovered that's an old book is called Will I Have a Friend? And all of my grandchildren have loved that, preschool and on up.
What about mistakes on a sports field? Sometimes coaches and teammates quite as supportive as maybe a friend would be.
The hope is that coaches, as they play their role, if they want to be a disciplined coach, that they do the teaching as well, that it's not just pointing out the mistake and then letting the child walk off. But, you know, my thought is the good coach is the teaching coach. Again, giving them a replacement behavior action that may work better, giving them reassurance that it's okay and get back in there. You know, and it also depends on the child who is playing the sport and the age of the team playing the sport. If they're younger children, I would hope there's a lot more reinforcement, reassurance, you know, good try, kind of that kind of thing versus the real competitive sports where you do need to be a little bit more tough, I would think, because let's face it, there are lots of competitive sports out there. You hear coaches coming down hard on the kids, but you hope that behind the scenes they're teaching.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on making mistakes.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Susan Rail about helping children learn the value in making mistakes.
It's interesting, we always heard things like Babe Ruth had the most strikeouts of any player ever. Of course, then he had the most home runs. If coaches and parents can dwell on those kinds of things, that you have to take a lot of risks in order to get to whatever your goal is, and you make mistakes along the way, and that's the way it is.
And that's with anything, the risks. You want kids to be able to take risks without the fear. If there is fear, there isn't a whole lot of trying new things, whether it's sports or schoolwork or even making friendships. If you're afraid that somebody's going to reject you and you're so afraid of the failure, you're less likely to go out there and do it.
Yeah, someone once said that the flip side of success is not trying. It's not failure.
Right, not failure. I've never loved that word anyway, failure. It's very strong. I mean, there is failing, yes, but it's a strong word that I think kids misinterpret and take to heart a little bit too much.
How do you feel about the situations where everyone on the team gets a trophy or a ribbon? Are we insulating our kids from being aware of their own limitations when we do that?
I think that depends on the age. I think the little kids, you know, if they get out there and they show up and they're there to have fun and try, they can get a ribbon for their efforts. But again, the older kids, if it's a recreational social team, maybe that's not so bad. But there are a lot of competitive teams, school teams, these select teams that they're very competitive, and it's the reality. So, no, you don't want to give a trophy to somebody that didn't do, you know, wasn't at the top. However, you want to make sure that the child is okay with, you know, are you having fun? Are you okay out there? You're not the best at this. We don't want to shelter you and tell you you are the best. But if you're having fun and you're doing your best and you feel good about it, you know, let's stay on the team. And if they're contributing in a positive way and the coaches and parents agree, that's okay that I'm not the best. But the child has to really be okay with not being the best. So again, parents and teachers and coaches have to let them know that it's okay. You're not going to get a trophy if you're not first in the track and field competition. You just won't.
And sometimes coaches or teams institute a trophy for most improved in the season or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We had a situation when one of my kids was on a swim team many years ago, and one of his teammates was a kid who always came in last. And everybody cheered for this kid because even though he always came in last, he always finished. And that was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And the irony is this child who always came in last but always finished grew up to be a Marine. And I think he does fine.
So. He didn't quit.
No.
He wasn't afraid to be that last person as long as he tried. So somewhere in the messages in the culture, maybe of his family or even his environment or schooling, he was able to come to terms with that. And, you know, if it starts to affect the child's self-esteem and they start to get too insecure and depressed, you don't want to force them to be on a team like that. But that's an amazing example.
What can we do about kids who are unsure of themselves to begin with? We want them to keep trying.
That's the self-esteem building, but you have to do it together. Together with the child, the parents, you know, hopefully the teachers are involved in this, but parents at home, that you keep trying. You don't want to just dictate to the child to keep trying again and then walk away. You want to do it with the child. Again, back to the communication and dialogue. To reinforce and to reassure and to practice and repeat the trying and letting them know it's okay.
Would it help in a situation if you have the time and the circumstance to learn something new with the child that's also new for you? Not a big deal, but maybe trying something in the kitchen or trying something where you and the child are almost starting out equally so that the child can see that you are also struggling with whatever it is.
Absolutely. And then using the cooking a meal in the kitchen, let's say you try a dish and it's not great, and the two of you together realize that, oh, well, I think there's too much pepper, or, you know, there's not enough cheese. Let's put more cheese and maybe more sauce in it to make it better. And then you try it again, and it's comes out more appealing. You love it. It's great. It's, again, an example of try again. It's okay. Try new things. Try to add things. Try to take away things. The cooking in the kitchen is an example, but it could be really useful for school, papers, friendships, you know, try something different. Again, the replacement behavior, the replacement comment, not just what you did wrong, and not just that it was wrong, but what to do differently. What are we going to do next time? The uncertain kids are hard to work with because they're already down on themselves. It could be just a personality issue. It may not be that the parents haven't supported them. It may just be that they are insecure kids. And so you really have to work a little extra to help them with their self-esteem.
In some biography, I think of Edison or somebody, it said how many gazillion different things that he invented were failures. And there were only relatively few, considering how many failures he had, that were fine.
You have to fail to learn. I do a lot of group therapy, and I did a little survey this week coming up to this program. And I asked the kids what the messages were in their family about making mistakes and failing and trying again. And it really was a mixed bag. Some of the kids recognize that it's okay to make mistakes. My parents make mistakes. They apologize when they make mistakes. And so it's okay. And there were some kids that said, oh, no, my parents expect me to be perfect. They expect straight A's. And so there is, you just felt that fear of trying anything new. And so when you see kids maybe holding back in school or not trying in certain areas in school, you may want to take a look at the fear. I mean, it may be the child's perception of what the parents are teaching, and the parents may not even be aware. Something to pay attention to.
What resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to pursue some of these issues further?
I think, well, Google.com is a wonderful resource that you could really just plug in anything that you want. But as I was looking through information, just to reiterate, the Talking Together series from the Autism Resource Center of South Florida, and that's the skill building part. I believe it's more about the social skill building. For the little kids, There's a lot of books. There's one that I love. It's called Everybody Makes Mistakes. It's the Sesame Street Muppets series. When I do group therapy with the younger kids, they just love it. And so it sparks conversation about making mistakes. And there's also, and I love music. If kids like music instead of books, Big Bird actually has lyrics to a song called Everybody Makes Mistakes. And Hannah Montana has a song called Nobody's Perfect. So if you look up her lyrics or you find that song, it's a very interesting resource for teenagers or probably middle schoolers that like Hannah Montana. Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. Plug in Everybody Makes Mistakes, and there's a lot of books. And I think starting young, like I said, with the younger children's books is a great way to start.
And my guess is a children's librarian would be able to help as well.
Sure.
Well, this has been a learning experience for both of us, and we're sure for our listeners. So, Susan Rail, thank you very much for helping us discuss how we can help children learn from making mistakes.
Thank you for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 463 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into. Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. Our sound engineer is Mark Vitelli. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt. Mm-hmm.